I was thinking about it because I went to Bath and Body Works yesterday, and I was like, oh.
What scents did you get? What smells?
Okay, first of all, I almost walked out with one of the Halloween candle holders, but
yeah, I figured.
I held back. You know, I sent you the eyeball candle holder?
Yes.
They had it. They had it.
Oh, and you didn't get it.
I didn't, because there was also this pearlized, skull that would hold a three wick. But then there was a hand, a creepy hand with a gold ring and green velvet sleeves that would hold a single wick, in a hand like this. And so I couldn't decide. So I didn't get any of them. But I got a lot of other things, but I don't know which holder to get.
I think you need to get two.
Don't do that.
On the whole, I've been a saint to those poor, unfortunate souls.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Poor Unfortunate Podcast. I'm Caroline Ametti.
And I'm Connor Perkins. Welcome to any new listeners. It's great having you here with us. Please remember to hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast. That way, all of our episodes download right to your device. You don't miss out on anything. And then when you get to the end of the episode, make sure to hit 5 stars and leave a rating and review. And for all of our returning listeners, welcome. Here we are. We promised you an episode 2. And here it is.
We did it.
Thanks for coming back. Again, if you all haven't hit 5 stars, left a review, please do that. They mean the most to us, especially right now as we're in the third season and we're like, all right, what's going on? Are people liking it? Are people not? If you haven't done it, now's the time.
Yeah, we share every single one with each other. We dissect it. We talk about it.
We cry.
We feel it.
Yes. So, Caroline, what's new?
Well, first of all, starting on a more somber note, we just want to take a moment and honor Pat Carroll, an absolute legend who passed away this week when we're recording this at the age of 95. Of course, if you're listening to this, you know that she was the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid. But she also had an amazing, illustrious comedy career. She was one of the stepsisters in the Leslie Ann Warren Cinderella that was on TV. She is iconic, and she had so much love for Ursula. And for Morgana as well.
Yeah. Well, with Ursula, she was like, I'm so frequently a character actor. No one ever really lets me be anything else or be that big, loud, audacious woman. And she got to do that with Ursula and had a blast. And
and beat out Elaine Stritch for the role. It was hers.
Yeah. And she loved the part so much. She kept coming back.
Yeah.
She would voice that character in basically everything. Mm-hmm. In video games, she would voice Ursula in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
She voiced Ursula in the Little Mermaid ride.
Yeah.
Returned and did that part over and over and over again whenever she could. And
She's
kind of one of those people that I just never sort of thought we'd get to a day where she wasn't here. I just sort of always took it for granted, I guess, that Pat Carroll will be here to do another round of Ursula. It's with heavy hearts that we say Beluga Savruga to you, Pat.
Beluga Savruga, Pat.
We love you so much. Thank you for being an inspiration to us. Turning the page, moving into a different realm of Disney news. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's happening in the parks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first of all, the Harmony Barbershop on Main Street reopened. It's been closed since the pandemic, so that's pretty big news. And the Dapper Dans were there, and it's back in business, and kids are getting haircuts, and it's lovely. Also, some news coming out of Tokyo. So we have gotten the title of the new show that's going to be taking place in Tokyo called Believe, Sea of Dreams. And just the promo poster alone with all of these Disney characters flying over the water looks absolutely insane. And can't wait to find out more about that.
Yeah, and it's set to open on November 11th.
Wow, so that's fast.
It's right around the corner. Yeah. And that's the, for those of you who have been listening for a while, this is the show that is replacing Fantasmic that we covered last season.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then the other big thing in the parks is that Magic Band Plus debuted with some issues already. Yeah. It wasn't a great start.
Yeah. It was said that they were supposed to have 2 to 3 days worth of charge. As people were purchasing them, it was clear that the Magic Bands are not sold fully charged. So it was dying on a lot of people in the first day. It has that sort of like glow with the show associated with it, but it's just not even up to par with what glow with the show was. It's right now, from what I am seeing and from what it does, I'm not convinced that it is worth the money that you would spend on it and to deal with something that you have to charge. Fortunately, when it does die, it still will open your room and like act as your park ticket and things like that. That happens regardless of whether or not there's a charge. But I'm like, I just don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm knocking on wood as I say this, but Connor and I both have Disney trips in the works.
For the first time in forever.
Since we started recording this podcast, we both have, we're going to be going to Disney World. Knock on freaking wood. Because you know what? These days, I can't count on anything. But hopefully, knock on wood, we will both be going soon. So we'll have some, finally, some insider experience with Lightning Lanes and Genie Plus and all this stuff. So can't wait.
Literally 2014 was the last time I was in Disney.
Yeah, it was 2018 for me. Yeah. So can't wait. So I mean, we'll have to have episodes dedicated to these trips. It's just been so long for, but we have not gone since we've started recording this podcast.
Rivers of Light opened and closed since I've been there. Yeah. Pandora has opened and celebrated its 5th anniversary.
Oh, God.
Concept art was released for Moana, The Journey of Water.
Oh, yes. Zach Ridley. Yes, after we were just talking about it in the last episode.
Yeah. Shows sort of like the water cycle, but reimagined in sort of like the art from Moana, that sort of like Pacific Islander style of art. And I dig it. I dig it. I'm like, I liked it too.
I know I'm skeptical about the whole thing, but it did look very beautiful. Yeah.
I'm excited. It'll be interesting to see Disney tackle a walkthrough right now and see what they do with it.
Very timely. Please see our previous episode. Yeah.
I think I'll sort of transition from Disney parks by also saying the D23 Expo is very quickly approaching, and that is coming up on September 9th and is completely sold out. They sold out a couple weeks ago. But brace yourself for that weekend because we're going to get a metric shit ton of announcements, especially about things happening in the parks. I can't imagine how much there is to be announced at this because the other thing that sort of goes hand in hand with this, they did all of their, basically all of their Marvel announcements at the San Diego Comic-Con event, which we did not really expect with it being the same year as D23. Right. Most people were expecting Marvel announcements to happen at D23. But instead, at San Diego Comic-Con, they unexpectedly announced a full lineup of TV series and movies for both phases 5 and 6 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Ending in 2 Avengers films, Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, that will close out phase 6. There's literally so many announcements that happened in that Marvel event that we could probably fill an episode just going through all of them. But I do want to point out one of those that came out, which is the release date of Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which is coming out this November 11th.
I can't believe that it's so,
so sad. Yeah, it's happening. The trailer.
That trailer. Oh,
gorgeous.
My God.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
So, in other Disney Pictures news, it was announced that we will be getting a musical comedy, live action, as far as we have heard, retelling of the Princess and the Pea fairy tale named Penelope.
Not to be confused with the Christina Ricci film, Penelope. That's like a Cinderella Pinocchio moment, which confused me.
Yes. So we're you know, I am always, you know, I love me some Once Upon a Mattress.
Hell yeah.
But I'm always down. I have always been ready for Disney to tackle The Princess and the Pea. But this is going to be live action, which at first I was like, I kind of wanted to be animated. But Ingrid Michaelson and Larry O'Keefe are going to be writing the music. So I'm intrigued. Yeah. And then Robert Sudeth is going to be writing the script. That's
Ingrid
kind of
Michaelson is like doing some work right now. She's doing the Notebook musical.
Yeah. I'm ready for her to write some Disney music. I know that this is so basic at this point, but I always get so excited when I hear that we're going to get a new musical fairy tale adaptation. That's never going to get old for me. So I can't wait to hear more about that. And then we'll also be getting Cars on the Road on September 8th on Disney Plus. So for all those Cars fans out there, so basically if you have a child under the age of 10, get ready.
Yeah. So that's coming out on Disney Plus Day, September 8th. And the other thing happening on September 8th so far, I mean, there's probably going to be a bunch more that happens on Disney Plus Day, but that's when the live action Pinocchio film comes out starring Tom Hanks and directed by Robert Zemeckis. Mm. We'll see what happens. Also got Cynthia Erivo in it.
Yeah, come on.
But some other Disney Plus announcements too that I just want to mention. Mm-hmm. So number one, we now have the trailer for Andor, the new Star Wars series about Cassian Andor, who we met in Rogue One, about, you know, his adventures and trials that happened before the events of Rogue One. That trailer looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah, all these Star Wars things look so good.
I'm super excited about this and, like, truly was not expecting to, but also, like, Rogue One is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And each time I watch it, it gets better and better and better. So I'm really excited about this. However, this series was supposed to come out this month in August. Mm-hmm. Now it's been pushed. It's coming out September 21st. Yeah. However, the premiere on September 21st will have three episodes as part of the premiere to sort of catch things up. But they will make sure that they're on track with their releases, because the other thing that's happening on November 30th is the premiere of Willow, the Lucasfilm fantasy series based on the 1980s movie starring Warwick Davis and Val Kilmer. This series I have been excited for since it was announced in the very early days of Disney Plus, and there had been like nothing spoken about it ever.
Yeah, really?
Now it's coming out November 30th. And so I know Lucasfilm tries, in the same way that Marvel tries to make sure that they don't have overlap as much as possible. So Andor should theoretically be coming to a close around the time that Willow starts, and then Mandalorian in the spring.
And so the cycle continues. Wow.
Yeah. Disney Plus, I remember in the early days, I was like, we need more original content on Disney Plus. I'm like, I know we just have to wait a couple years and that's going to happen. Noted. And this is the payoff. Like, it is happening.
It's happening.
So that is a lot of Disney news. Mm-hmm. That
I'm surprised.
This is actually,
this is actually also
lot of stuff that's been happening over the last like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's not even like we're catching up on stuff.
Yeah.
So continue to watch all of this space, especially as the D23 Expo approaches. There's going to be a lot more stuff, especially as Disney Plus Day approaches. So, all righty. Well, I think that's pretty much all the news that we're going to cover right now.
Yeah.
As if that wasn't enough.
That's it.
So this episode is our showdown episode. If you haven't listened to the podcast before, the showdown episode, this is where we take two similar things and we pit them against each other to see which one comes out on top. And this episode, we came up with a fun little theme. In place of this episode last season, we covered two Disney Channel original movies that launched TV series. In this episode, we will be covering a Disney Channel original movie and a Walt Disney Pictures theatrical release that definitively ended Disney Channel original series. So we are talking about summertime classics, the Even Stevens movie, and the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Ah, true summer vacation, summertime classics. It's such a good time to talk about these. Yeah.
This was all Caroline's idea. So needless to say, spoilers ahead, if you have not watched the Lizzie McGuire movie, if you have not watched the Even Stevens movie, both of these are available to you on Disney Plus. So we will take a moment right now to pause. You can go watch those movies. They're about an hour and a half each. And then you can come back. And welcome back. All right. So I will confess, I have never watched the Lizzie McGuire movie until this viewing.
That is so wild. Oh my gosh.
I know.
I'm so excited to talk about this with you. Wow. So as always with these showdowns, we want to make it as fair of a fight as possible. So we've chosen a few parameters that we're going to judge these films by. So first of all, as we do, we're each going to give you some background information on these two movies. And then we're going to look at them through three major lenses. The first of them just being plot and story. So we're going to look at those and look at the strengths and weaknesses there. Then we're going to move into the strengths and weaknesses of the production itself. And then we're going to talk a bit about the value that these films have in ending their respective series. So care in characters, in themes, and also we're going to talk a bit about, can these movies stand alone if you weren't a viewer of the series that they were based on? So another fun thing is that these movies both came out in the same summer. What a summer it was. So
a month apart from each other. Yeah. And it was also the year of Freaky Friday.
Oh my God, lucky us. This was that category. Yeah, this was the category.
Was that year.
Yeah. What game was that? Was that Life's Full of Tough Choices?
Life's Full of Tough Choices? Or no, it was all, well, we covered it then, but we also did had it in Goodbye So Soon.
Right, Goodbye So Soon, yes.
Because, like, this was the year of, like, Finding Nemo.
Oh, my gosh.
Pirates of the Caribbean, I believe.
Yes, and we were, like, the perfect age this summer. Like, we were like, around 10 years old. Like, it was – times were really, really
good.
This
is golden age of childhood. Yeah, it really was. This is good.
So let's just start with Lizzie McGuire first because she came out – her movie came out a month before the Even Stevens movie. So let's talk about it a little. So the Lizzie McGuire movie was released in theaters – on May 2nd, 2003, and it was the first Disney Channel series to have a movie for Walt Disney Pictures or a theatrical release at all. So the film's tagline was, "The only risk in taking an adventure is not taking it at all." Yes.
Oh, my God.
The film takes place after the second and final, which I actually totally forgot about. I thought Lizzie McGuire had at least three seasons. It only had two seasons.
No, it had two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of episodes per season. But if you don't know, Lizzie McGuire was a half-hour series created by Terry Minsky. Terry Minsky went on to create Andy Mack for Disney Channel and also wrote for several episodes of Sex and the City. So the show premiered in January 2001 and followed the classic middle school trials and tribulations of 13-year-old Lizzie. She navigates school rivalries and crushes and the ever-elusive dream of popularity alongside her best friends Miranda and Gordo and returns home to loving parents and a mischievous little brother. Throughout the series, Lizzie's inner thoughts are delivered in soliloquies by her animated self in a unique mixed-media format. The series ran for 65 episodes from 2001 to 2004, and this film serves as the series finale. The one thing that I will say that is sort of confusing is that the final episode aired after this movie came out. So we were just confused, and I'll tell you a little bit.
I have some comments about that.
Yeah, me too. I have some ideas about why that happened, but it was a strange time for Lizzie McGuire when this movie came out. So we'll get there. This film is directed by Jim Fall. He's done a lot of TV movies, actually, and produced by Stan Rogow, who also produced the series. The movie is written by Susan Estelle Jansen, who wrote for Home Improvement and Boy Meets World, Ed Dechter, who also did Boy Meets World, and The Santa Claus 2 and The Santa Claus 3, and John J. Strauss, who also did those two Santa Claus movies. The music is by Cliff Adelman, who did music for Free Willy 3 and The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, which I love. Yes, with the soundtrack of iconic songs like Why Not and What Dreams Are Made Of, both performed by star Hilary Duff. The soundtrack overall is just full of early 2000s dreams with performances by other stars of the time like Hillary's sister Haley, Jump 5, who I was obsessed with, and Element, who I was also obsessed with. This was my time, baby. So
the cover of The Tide is High.
The Tide is High. Oh, my God. The film stars Hilary Duff as Lizzie McGuire and Isabella Parigi with Haley, her sister, as Isabella's singing voice. We have Adam Lambert returning as Gordo, Yanni Gelman as Paolo Vallisari, Alex Borstein as Miss Ungermeyer, absolutely iconic performance.
Perfection.
Robert Carradine returning as Sam McGuire, Hallie Todd as Joanne McGuire, Jake Thomas as Matt McGuire, Ashley Brillalt as Kate Sanders, which also, side note, throughout the series, Kate is referred to as both Kate Sanders and Kate Saunders, and just nobody really made a decision either way. Clayton Snyder as Ethan Kraft, and Brendan Kelly as Sergey. Noticeably missing is Lalaine as Lizzie's best friend, Miranda. Lalaine was filming the Disney Channel original movie, You Wish, at the time, and was unavailable, and we will talk about that as well. So the budget for the film was $55.5 million. The film was shot on location in Rome, so that can get pricey. And the box office was $17 million. It reached number two at the box office upon its release, right behind X-Men 2. It has a 49% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 5.5 on IMDb. The reception, listen, does it matter? It doesn't matter because who it was made for.
I mean,
for,
it does a bit.
Who it was made for, we all went to see it, so whatever, but fine.
I didn't see it.
Roger Ebert called the film too slick and professional, and Entertainment Weekly called it a clever, agreeably weightless theatrical outing. So there were plans to continue the Lizzie McGuire series after the film, so there was an idea that, you know, Lizzie is going to high school, we're going to move the series to ABC and make it a little bit more grown up. That, of course, did not happen. There were also plans for another movie. Interestingly, if you watch this, like, behind the scenes of shooting the movie with Hilary Duff on YouTube, she says several times, she's like, we're here shooting the first Lizzie McGuire movie, the first Lizzie McGuire movie. So there were plans for more films, and it never happened because of creative differences between Hilary Duff and Disney, which we have seen continue into the canceled adult reboot that was supposed to happen for Disney Plus. Again, creative differences. Very interesting. All right. So the movie was nominated for 3 Teen Choice Awards: for Choice Movie, Comedy, Choice Movie Actress, Comedy, for Hillary, and Choice Movie Breakout Star, Female, for Hillary, with her winning that last one that year. All right. And the plot. Buckle up if you don't know the plot already.
Even if you do.
Lizzie McGuire has just graduated junior high and is off on the summer adventure of a lifetime to Rome with her loyal best friend Gordo by her side. After an embarrassing mishap at graduation, Lizzie can't get away fast enough. Then, in a chance encounter at the Trevi Fountain, Lizzie meets Italian pop star Paolo Vallisari, who mistakes her for his ex-singing partner, Isabella Parigi. Indeed, Lizzie does bear a striking resemblance to Isabella, and it seems like Paolo is really into it. Paolo pursues Lizzie, convincing her to sneak away from her school group, including Gordo, who covers for her, and eventually impersonate Isabella at the International Music Video Awards so that the pair won't be fined for canceling after Isabella left Italy after the breakup of their duo. Paolo insists it will be easy since Isabella always lip syncs anyway. Lizzie agrees and is whisked into an adventure of self-discovery as her confidence blooms and she discovers who she and everyone she thinks she knows really is.
Lovely. Lovely job. I still half follow.
Right. I know.
We're going to talk about
that. Yeah, we are.
But before we do, I'm going to talk about the Even Stevens movie. So I'm going to give you some background information about Even Stevens, the TV show, in the same way that Caroline sort of gave you some background about Lizzie McGuire. So Even Stevens was a half hour, 22 to 23 minute comedy television series on Disney Channel, and it ran for 3 seasons and 65 episodes, which, fun fact, 65 episodes at the time was the Disney Channel cap on any series. Once it hit 65 episodes, it was done.
So that's what Lizzie hit too.
Yeah,
got it.
That's what Lizzie hit as well.
Interesting.
Even Stevens follows the Stevens family, a typical suburban family living in Sacramento, California, and the various antics of the family, including the fierce sibling rivalry between the perfect academic middle child, Ren, and the wild prankster youngest child, Lewis, as they go through middle school. The show first aired on June 17th, 2000, and ended its run on June 2nd, 2003. The show was very well loved and consistently nominated for awards, winning a Daytime Emmy for Shia LaBeouf and a BAFTA Award for Best International in 2002. So the Even Stevens movie is based on Even Stevens, which was developed by Matt Dearborn. The movie was directed by Sean McNamara, who directed episodes of Even Stevens, That's So Raven, and the film Casper Meets Wendy. Oh. It was produced by Stacey Kozier-Box and David Grace. It was written by Dennis Rinsler and Mark Warren, who both wrote for the TV series. The cinematography was by Christian Sebald. Music was by Mark Motherbaugh, who wrote the themes for Rugrats. He wrote the score for Halloween Town and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, my God.
It originally aired on June 13th, 2003, and it starred, among many others, Shia LaBeouf as Lewis Stevens, Christy Carlson Romano as Ren Stevens, Donna Peskow as Eileen Stevens, Tom Virtue as Steve Stevens, Nick Spano as Donnie Stevens, the older brother, Stephen Anthony Lawrence as Beans, Tim Meadows as Miles McDermott, the host of Family Fake Out, and then a lot of the other actors who reprised roles from the TV series. And a fun fact, Mutai was played by Josh Keaton, who is the voice of young Hercules Hercules.
And he looks like Hercules. Like, yes.
Budget for this, unknown. I cannot figure out how much money they had on this.
Not much.
Arguably not much, but a great deal from most other Disney Channel original series because location shooting. Mm-hmm. It has a 52% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb. I will note both higher than Lizzie McGuire movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
And reception, it was the most watched cable program the day it aired on June 13th, 2003, garnering 5.1 million total viewers. Which is really impressive.
That's amazing,
for a Disney Channel original movie. I would kind of argue that this is one of those Disney Channel original movies that started, like, paving the way for those big DCOM releases that made a lot of buzz, kind of like the High School Musicals of the generation. A quick synopsis for you. I apologize, it's not as funny as usual. It's the end of the school year, and the Stevens family is here to stay in Sacramento. Trying to cherish the time that they have together, the family decides to take up an offer for an all-expense-paid trip to the mysterious island of Mandolino. But when an island paradise is plagued with one disaster after another, the Stevens family are stranded and must survive 1 week on the island. As tensions rise, it seems like everything is designed to tear them apart. Because it is. Unbeknownst to them, the Stevens are the stars of a new reality TV show called Family Fake Out, and their friends are their only hope to get to the island and save them from humiliation and each other. So, that's the Even Stevens movie.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So let's start with some plots of these movies.
Yeah, so let's look at the plot first. Let's talk about the plot and the story of the Lizzie McGuire movie. So, in terms of strengths of this, I think the first thing that I'll say is I think in general, taking Lizzie as a character out of her comfort zone and into a new country, a new experience, is a great move for the first Disney Channel series to become a theatrical release movie because you've got to go big or go home. And I think this really hits that mark. That's what's going to draw me off the couch and into a movie theater to see Lizzie. And honestly, everything for me about this plot is a hit for the target demographic, which at the time I was. Okay, so here are all the things that I was totally into at the time. A cute boy love interest who sings and is Italian. A big costumed music number where Lizzie gets to become a literal pop star. Finding out that your best friend had your back the whole time and might even love you. A fashion show montage. It really just has all of those fantastical preteen elements that you could look for, the ones that are grounded in reality, but still out of a 13-year-old's wildest dreams. So when you're looking, a review called this like, a light piece of, of course it's a light piece of entertainment. And there are certain things in early 2000s light pieces of entertainment that you have to do. And one of them is a fashion montage. And we did it. So... It hit those marks.
The fashion itself was questionable, but
listen, I copied half of that crap at the time. Limited to, don't even get me started.
But I will say, like Parent Trap, that fashion montage, the photo shoot is so much better done.
But come on! Also, the class level of the Parent Trap is a little bit different from this.
Never let you hang on my
I'll never let you go. Anyway. So I actually, it's interesting. I remember thinking when I was writing this out, I was like, you know, I don't have a ton of, I didn't think I had a lot of complaints about the plot. And then I started to think about it. So actually the first thing in terms of weaknesses of the plot that I'd like to talk about is actually the Lizzie Gordo kiss. So I've actually talked about this moment on the podcast before, and I've been thinking about it ever since then. So first of all, I know that we had to tread a very thin line here because we're not going to do full-on romance because these are legit middle schoolers and we're ending the series. And while I enjoy that the film's finale moment isn't that the culmination of this series is that Lizzie and Gordo were meant to be all along and it's all about the fact that they are in love all along. I don't need that. That's not what it's all about. And I'm glad it wasn't that. But this final moment deflated the movie and therefore the series for me. I'm definitely okay with a bashful, awkward moment after the kiss. That awkwardness is 100% true to the series. But then the movie ended on them running back inside because Lizzie says that she can't be getting into any more trouble on this trip. And although this might be running a bit more into the category of like themes that we'll talk about later, we should have ended on some kind of moment of strength and confidence for Lizzie. Let Gordo run back inside alone, or let them stay on the roof together. But let's close on Lizzie fully realizing what a big step these past 2 weeks have been for her. She's a completely different person than we've seen throughout the entire series. And that kind of moves into the value of this film in the ending of the series too, which I know we're going to get to. But for me, and Connor, I know that you feel the same way. Not having Miranda here was a huge loss. The trio of friends here, they're the heart of the series.
Yeah.
And I think this plot specifically also needed someone to call Lizzie out the way that Miranda constantly does and checks her. Gordo's attempts at bringing Lizzie back to reality aren't always enough. That's why we have Miranda, to really give it to Lizzie when she needs to hear it. And because of this, because Lizzie didn't have that person to ground her in that way, there was an edge of unlikability that started to develop with
yes.
her. Which Lizzie
yes.
is not unlikable. She's
she
just
is
not
unlikable.
She is
likable. She is one of the most likable Disney Channel characters that has ever come out. Like, this is why parents and kids tuned in to watch Lizzie McGuire.
Absolutely.
Not many TV shows on Disney Channel were parents and their kids watching together. I would argue they were Even Stevens.
Yeah.
And they were Lizzie McGuire. Those
That's
were
what
the
it was
two.
In my family, 100%.
And I really don't feel like it ever happened again.
Yeah. And so then we make her a little bit unlikable, which I thought was impossible. And also, I would have liked a moment of Lizzie really getting to tell Paolo off herself. Like, we see her spend the series mooning over boys like Ethan, like Paolo. And I needed a moment, a real moment of her taking her power back and really speaking on her feelings in the face of betrayal and potential embarrassment. So I think... Again, the themes that we addressed in this, I liked them, but I don't think that we took them all the way. And overall, I think the premise of this movie could have perhaps used some simplifying. Like when I was writing this synopsis, I had to –
The synopsis is all over the place.
No, I had to double check. I was like, why exactly was it that Lizzie needed to take Isabella's place? It's like she lip-syncs.
Yeah.
They're getting sued. They're not So I think it's a little overcomplicated and silly, and then therefore probably not the most clear to preteens either. Again, were they really going to care? No, but it's a 90-minute preteen rom-com pretty much. Make it simpler. And I may be completely off on this too. It's been a minute since I've seen the series, though I saw every single episode.
I recently watched the series during the pandemic, so I'm pretty up to date.
Okay, so tell me then. Was singing ever something that was a part of Lizzie's
no.
life? Got it.
No.
I know that
really
we just needed to use Hillary's vocal talent, and I'm here
it
for
It was
that.
Because they were pushing Hillary Duff to do it, so that's why they were trying
right.
to do this. But, like,
yeah.
singing was not a super thing for – like, it was not the thing
right.
for Lizzie. Lizzie was more excited about, like – being popular
and fashion
fitting in.
And like,
she liked fashion. She had the whole like stint with the yearbook
mm-hmm.
situation
yes,
that was
yes.
happening. Like,
yeah.
Which was one of my favorite episodes
yes.
where they're at the school dance and they're doing the mission and like her mom's in on it.
Yes.
And she,
yes.
the casino night. Like,
yes.
oh, so good. So good.
So good. So yeah, so of course it's abundantly clear why Disney wanted to have this involve singing, but it just having Lizzie's journey culminate in a connection to singing, if that hasn't been a part of her story before, is a bit odd,
it's
especially
weird.
For
it's
someone
weird.
As like devastatingly self-conscious as Lizzie is.
Yeah.
And there's just, again, it's small things like that here and there. Again, this kind of thing, I'm not going to come down too hard on it, but it's ultimately, like I said, it's a movie for preteens. But for example, Matt, Lizzie's younger brother, allegedly just, you know, lying about, oh, I miss Lizzie. That being enough to get the whole Maguire family on a plane to Italy just was like a bit silly to me.
There's so many jump the shark like
yeah.
moments in this. Like at the beginning of this film, we see Lizzie freaking out over having to make a speech.
Yeah.
And you tell me
yeah.
that in the span of an hour and a half, that same girl is then up on a stage delivering
yeah.
a like full on pop upbeat number to the world.
Yeah.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
And especially if it's not something that is like at the heart of Lizzie, where it's like she's shy, but she's a really good singer.
Exactly. I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have some strengths and I have some weaknesses.
Okay.
I'll start with my strengths. So both of these films, even Steven's movie and Lizzie McGuire, both start with junior high graduation sequences.
Oh my God.
I think the strength of Lizzie McGuire movie over even Steven's is this is definitely the more realistic version of a middle school graduation, if you have one at all. So like... props to that.
I will say though, when I graduated middle school, we like did have a valedictorian and stuff, as silly as that is.
When I graduated middle school, like I can't even remember. I don't think we had a ceremony.
That's funny.
I don't think there was one. I think we were just like, congratulations, you're going to high school.
Yeah.
And like we left. Like there wasn't an assembly. Like, no. I also think a strength of this is it's a story about Lizzie finding her confidence, which is the part that like that feels appropriate to an ending of Lizzie McGuire. Like it is a story throughout the whole TV series about a girl who like she's not sure of herself, things like that. And like if the arc is Lizzie is confident, I buy that as an ending for the series.
Mm-hmm.
The quest of identity, knowing you are enough to being the climax of the movie. I think they got that right, where it's like the individuality at the climax, like that was right on. And then the last strength that I'll say here, I think Alex Borstein is a terrific addition. I mean, she can do no wrong. I have been a huge fan of Alex Borstein since when I saw her when I was younger on like Mad TV.
Oh my God.
Like, God bless her.
Alex Borstein in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is some of the best stuff on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. But to some of my weaknesses here, I agree with a lot of the things that you pointed out. The plot overall feels a bit like we're not, I kind of said it in a kind way, it feels a bit like we're not on solid ground or as solid ground as I would hope for. Lizzie is like kind of and kind of not mistaken for an Italian pop star, but with just blonde hair and a heavy American accent and has to present an award as that Italian celebrity at a music award show, but also perform a song that she's never really heard before, but she just has to lip sync it. Just kidding.
Dance.
She has to sing live because the guy who was the one who needed her to lip sync, he actually is the one who lip syncs and he wanted to shame the real pop star. What is happening? Like
crying.
I'm following it. I'm here about 75% of the way, but there's still a part of me that just feels like this is rough and very overcomplicated. And there was a more solid through line here that we could have found.
God.
And it would be one thing if Lizzie McGuire were a bit more of like an absurdist kind of show that had us take big leaps and bounds in episodes to begin with, or like a longer form TV show that takes multiple twists and turns. And like we're used to all of that, but this is doing that, but like that's not the history of the show. Like this felt very much like a departure from the TV series and less of a celebration of what we loved so much about it, which when you're thinking of something that's supposed to serve as a finale is a celebration of everything that you've accomplished. It's a showcase of all of your characters that everyone has come to know and love. And
well, that's what I was torn about actually with Miss Ungermeyer, because I absolutely love Alex Borstein, so great in the
yes.
role. But I'm like, but she took up so much of the movie, and I'm torn.
I agree.
Because I'm like, this is not a Disney Channel original movie on Disney Channel. where that has permission to be more of, let's just revisit everybody you love one last time. When it's in theaters, you got to add in some new things, but we already have Paolo. So I don't know.
I agree. Like, I love Alex Borstein's character. Yeah. I think she's a great addition to it. When I was watching it, I was fully expecting her mom to go and be a chaperone. I was fully expecting that to be a last minute decision at the airport.
Yeah.
And then it didn't happen. I was like, wait, where's Hallie Todd?
That would have made more sense, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Having to get away from her mom. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you.
Like, just a little bit. And that feels a little bit more of
the series.
Lizzie.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Of the series.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To still take us overseas. Like, I get that. That's a really good idea to bring people into the theaters. You're 100% right on that. But also, like, for a theatrical release, I'm going to ask for a little bit more than the kind of like pseudo Frankenstein plot that we came up with, sort of like get Lizzie from here to there.
Yeah.
Like, no. And then a lot of my other things I have sort of in that last category.
Yeah.
About how we're finishing up the series, because I think that's really where the bulk of my frustration, I think, with this movie came from is like, how are we ending this series? Things like that. But the last thing I'll say, anything where we're having our main character double with a foreign accent that they really aren't that confident in, it's probably going to be a no for me. Like, I think probably if we didn't know Lizzie so well, and if Hilary Duff wasn't just such a specific performer, like, I think that's probably why she was like, she and the show were like such a zeitgeist. Like, she was so specific. There was no one else like her. She was like everyone and like no one at the same time. And I think to have the plot be about like this doubling thing, having an exact match, I don't think was helpful. I think it actually would have been better if Isabella was played by her sister.
Mm.
Like, not just the voice, but like the actual performer, where they look enough alike, but you can see that they aren't quite. Like, to someone who is like someone on the street, they're like, oh my gosh, yes, that's Isabella. But, like, I think it would have been a little bit better, because otherwise we're just like, okay, that's Hilary Duff doing an Italian accent. And it takes me out.
Yeah.
And it is a valiant effort, and it's a lot to ask. But we can forgive it if it's a character that we've never met before and an actor that we've never seen before on the show. And I think Haley could have gotten that done for us.
Okay.
So I would have rather had her be Isabella, just like be Isabella.
Okay.
All right. So that's everything I'm going to say about plot and story. I mean, I could go on about this plot for like ages because it makes no damn sense. But
let me tell you, in 2003, I did not give a rat's ass.
Sure. But flipping over to the plot of the Even Stevens movie. So here I actually have a few strengths here that are happening.
I do too.
It's, I think, honestly, an insanely clever premise. And very timely for when it came out. So prank shows and like America's Funniest Videos, like they were abundant at this time. And this is a way of sort of elevating it in the same way that sort of like Rome takes Lizzie and puts her somewhere else. This is the same sort of thing where it's like taking this family and putting them somewhere else that we've never seen before.
Definitely.
In a way that actually fits the nature of this sitcom. Like, prank shows, this is a show about like how Lewis pranks and now the whole family is being pranked. That makes sense. I follow the logic. Like, this feels of the TV show. I think it's attributed to having the writers of the show actually write this movie. This whole scenario is very much like what a sitcom actually is. You find a funny situation and you see how your characters that you've established deal with it. So we have a very well-established family of characters in the Stevens family with very distinct characteristics that any character could really carry an episode if we wanted to. And in many ways, like, that's the perfect kind of family to like plug into this formula. I find this plot actually very easy to follow. It doesn't really feel that complex, even though it is a film about twists and turns and like plot twists and things like that. Pretty much everything feels like it's the next logical step in the story and motivated from the characters and how they would honestly react in this absurd situation. I also think it's a real solid thing for ending the TV series that the plot references decisions and plot points from the last episode of the TV series. So in the last episode of Even Stevens, it's thought that the mom, She has won a seat in Congress. So Steve quits his job and everyone is prepared that now they're going to move to Washington, D.C. and leave Sacramento. And then a recount happens and they discover she didn't actually win the seat and they're all staying in Sacramento. And it's a good thing. But here in this series, this is the summer right after that's happened. Steve is jobless because he quit his job because they were supposed to go in the last episode. Great idea. The family's not moving anymore. They don't have any plans for the summer. So this seems like, okay, great. Now they have a summer vacation. They could feasibly take this because they wouldn't have any plans because they were planning on moving. So there's a lot of like references, both subtle and overt, to the last episode that I think really do a good job here. And then I would also say it's just genuinely hilarious. Like the comedic timing and physical comedy chops of the whole cast is on display and in full force here. The performances are archetypal, but still relatively nuanced. Like I do think Shia LaBeouf as Lewis Stevens is like a phenomenon because like it is very over the top, but not over the top in a way that I could see anyone else doing it. Like it's not the first.
Nobody else
could
do this. Yeah, nobody else could do it. It's very interesting. That performance is so interesting.
But I also even think of like Christy Carlson Romano coming downstairs on like the first day of summer vacation. They have the orange juice and she drinks orange juice and her dad's like, "Oh, are you still upset about what's his name?" And she's like, "His name's Gil, Dad. Gil." And like I'm like, this the comedic timing is so good. It's so good. This show really created like a magic formula that Disney desperately tried to repeat with so many other shows, and they just never got there. And that formula that was a success is at the max in this movie. And I think that was a real success. In terms of my weaknesses, junior high graduations, if they happen, are not like this.
I love that this is what you picked again.
I'm frustrated about. I don't know why it irritates. Maybe it's because I didn't really have one. But I get why they do that because the main viewers are in middle school. So it's like speaking to their time of life.
Yeah.
And the transition to high school, which is like the next important life milestone for them. And like they inflate it to like a size. So like in their imaginations, it would feel very much like this size. But like, damn, this ceremony is so unrealistic in like every way. One, that you've got a whole, at the very least, that you have the whole school proudly singing an alma mater. That does not happen. If your school has an alma mater that is sung and you expect your entire graduating class to sing it, ain't gonna happen. And yeah, so I really feel like that's pretty much it that I have for my weaknesses in terms of plot. Like in terms of logic, it doesn't seem like there's any extreme leaps for me here. They take care of a lot of the plot holes as the story goes along. So I don't have that many complaints here. What do you have?
I'm very much on the same level as you. Like in terms of the strengths, I feel the same way. Like I was so obsessed with this movie growing up. I haven't seen it in a minute. And I was really scared that revisiting it would fall apart. And
it doesn't.
And sure, there are a couple of elements that didn't stand the test of time. But I genuinely was guffawing at some things. Like Chris in the other room was like, "Oh, you're having a good time in there." Like
Come
I was
on,
laughing.
Dad, we can have family time here.
No, me and my brother used to quote
Mother of Pearl beans. Mother of Pearl.
That was like our favorite thing. And
this
and
is
that's
a happy day.
Still...
Everyone is happy.
Yes.
Like
just great, such great performances.
Yeah.
And like you said, there were so many ridiculous laugh moments that reminded me why I loved the show, why the show was so unique. And that's why I largely think that this is a very successful movie. I think in a way that maybe I was missing a little bit from Lizzie, I think we got a little bit, just the right amount of the characters that we love from the series. And it didn't feel forced because the flash is back to the real world with the characters we love from the series. Watching the Stevens family on the show were just perfect and funny and just the right amount of them where we feel like we didn't miss them. Like one of my favorites was Tawny and just being able to have Tawny be a part of this too and like Ren's best friends on the bed watching. It's just delightful.
And then the principal like, don't kiss, yeah. Don't kiss.
Like, and the other one's like, it's so romantic. I hope she kisses it. It's just so funny. Like these characters are so fair, just fantastic.
It's just a really clever way to really like
include
do
everybody.
The once around for
yeah,
everybody.
The once around. Exactly. And like you said, I agree. The device of the reality show is just clever and funny. And I got the same feeling that I had when this first came out, is I'm just so entertained by the way the producers of Family Fake Out were manipulating the Stevens family. And I felt the same way watching it now, like when Mutai is kind of going to give everything away to Ren, and they send in the villagers, and they're like, Lewis did this. I don't know. Something about it to me is just so funny and clever. Like,
for me, it's the counter on the screen as everyone's sending in their votes as to whether or not Ren should kiss him. Oh, my God,
yes.
And it crosses like 5 million. Yeah, yeah. This is absurd. I love it. The best.
Like, I also just loved the concept of, like, I think I enjoyed this when I was a kid too. Just like, wow, that's the thing that everybody in the nation is doing that summer, is watching the Stevens family on Family Fake Out.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious.
But on the day this came out, that's like kind of what was happening. Like, everybody who was anybody on was watching TV was watching the Even Stevens movie.
That's exactly right. I've got to say, I don't have many weaknesses either. What my weakness here is a little bit hard to describe. So maybe I want to see if you kind of know what I'm talking about. So first of all, I completely forgot, really forgot, that Ren is in middle school.
Oh, no. Yeah. 100%. Oh, my God. Chrissy Carlson Murano's like, what, 26?
Oh, my God. and Lizzie McGuire's not perfect on this front either, but they get a hell of a lot closer. Everything about the way that Ren is portrayed, like going from boyfriend to boyfriend, the way that they costumed her, it was rubbing me the wrong way. She's supposed to be 14 years old. And I was like, they were looking at her through this lens that actually made me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And of course, this part of it that I'm about to talk about is a little bit of a conceit of the series. So it is what it is. But and this is why, because Lewis is the one who pulls the pranks and she's usually at the other end of them. But she just gets like things dumped on her. She gets dragged around. Something about it was making me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but something about the way that they were portraying her was overly mature and I didn't like it.
I don't know. The boyfriend thing, I didn't really bat much of an eye of it. Mm-hmm. I know that, like, that wasn't really a thing that was sort of, like, a priority for Ren, but it sort of felt like what we were trying to start the movie with was Ren has everything. She's the valedictorian. Mm-hmm. She's the teacher's pet. Like, we get to see the celebration of, like, her success of the series, where it's like she has always been striving to be the valedictorian. And here she is. She gets to be the valedictorian. She gets to go out because she has a boyfriend, which is, like, the other thing. So, like, she has it all. And then it's just like, oh, and then that sort of gets all taken away from her.
Yeah.
I was like, I think it's just like, let's boil her down to the essence of her hatred for Lewis.
Yeah.
And let's let that play out and then resolve it.
Yeah.
So that then it's like everything is taken care of again.
I follow. Yeah.
So, but I see where you're coming from, where it's like, yes, she is costumed in such a way. And maybe that's part of the fact that, like, they couldn't help but address the fact that, like, Christy Carlson Romano was a lot older than the character that she was portraying.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, like, in this situation, again, it's summer. We're not in school. I just always loved that, you know, the center of Ren was her smarts.
Yeah.
And so then it becoming about boys bothered me. But in this situation, it didn't bother me deeply. But I just couldn't put my finger on something that was just not quite sitting right with me. But I think I understand it a bit better now. But, yeah, other than that, I've got to say, like, I don't pretty really have any other weaknesses. Like, come on, it's a good story. It's freaking funny,
it's a
good man.
Story.
It's funny.
Good story and it's freaking funny.
Yeah.
Let's move over to Lizzie McGuire movie. Let's talk about the production of it, the production value of it.
The value.
Because it is giving production value.
Really? I mean, as a, like, yeah, like, obviously, it's so exciting just to get to see a series culminate in such a lush and gorgeous way, especially in comparison to what was, of course, a much smaller budget for the Even Stevens movie. Some of the slickness that Roger Ebert called out is actually enjoyable to me, honestly, from, like, the crispness of the cinematography to the very beautiful score. I enjoy that.
Even the way that Lizzie's inner soliloquy is animated.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like,
it's so
she's
clear
got, like,
and, like,
proper shadowing.
Yes,
and, like,
absolutely.
It's much more interesting.
Yeah.
Which I am just now realizing, and pardon me for interrupting, that is probably a major thing that had to do with the plot. The soliloquy of Lizzie sort of goes away throughout the movie.
Yes, it is. It's less prevalent, and
it's like now that I think about it, there, but like, she doesn't push a big part of the TV show.
Her soliloquies in the TV show push things forward. Like, she comes to some sort of realization. This was more just like running commentary rather than like, yeah, oh my God, I'm realizing something about the situation. Yeah, I never really realized that.
Even arguing with herself.
Yeah, this is more just like.
They could, commentary. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. They could have let the inner Lizzie, who has, like, the breadth of knowledge that everything she's learned from the TV show, mm-hmm. serve as her own Lalaine character.
Interesting.
To argue with herself. But they chose
And that's
to.
How you grow up, too, is you start to really yeah. bring yourself back down. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just hit me right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's we really interesting you bring that up. Yeah.
And if we're going to have a slick animation, like.
Let's make it do something.
Let's let it do some work.
Yeah, right. Huh. That's so interesting. So obviously, again, being the target demographic, one of the highlights of the Lizzie McGuire series for me was the fashion. And Lizzie has a very signature style, and we got it in this movie in spades. And
very
like,
jean jacket, tiny braids.
Oh my God. Also the little, like the stacked bracelets, the tiny purses, the like inflatable dress during the fashion. It's just like, oh my gosh.
The inflatable dress.
And as I mentioned earlier, I actually really feel like this soundtrack and the score really elevate this movie. The score mm-hmm. makes this feel more level with something like The Princess Diaries, for example, because at the end we get like the Lizzie McGuire movie suite, which I am such a sucker for those. And this has one and I just love it. And the early 2000s hits, as I mentioned, make this feel like the epic summer adventure that it's supposed to be. The soundtrack is just like almost another character in this. So when it comes to weaknesses, the things that you were talking about when it came to Hillary also playing Isabella, I think part of it comes down to production value too. So I think there was just a huge opportunity here. If we're going to go the route of having Hillary play both roles, I think there was a huge opportunity here to have fun with that, especially from a costume and makeup persona prosthetics. And accent.
Give her a new nose. Give her a new chin.
Yeah. I think it could have then been an even deeper moment to highlight Hillary's talent. Like, make Isabella a little bit more of a big personality, a big diva, so that Hillary can really show the other side of herself and really, like, give us a character performance. Like, please just, like, give her a better wig.
That wig.
Give her a better overall look. The fun of seeing, like, the lead character double as someone else was sucked out of this because it felt like Isabella didn't get enough effort put into her from mm-hmm. production to the writing to the whole thing.
It was not a Lindsay Lohan moment.
Exactly.
Could have been, but was not.
Exactly. And again, it's 2003, but there's just some small things. Like, it's funny. Like, this moment has become a gif and has become iconic and funny in its own right. But the shot of Lizzie from behind dancing to What Dreams Are Made Of, oh, like, looking out into the
that's
Coliseum.
A woman. That is like a 38-year-old woman grooving.
First that of all, that not Lizzie that McGuire. She does is so you iconic. Cannot,
you cannot tell me that is not a 38-year-old woman grooving. That is not Hillary Duff. I will not buy it.
So it's their small things like
I
that.
I literally pointed that shot out, I think, in a moment in somewhere in my notes.
It's little things like that. I will say, though, I mean, I guess I'm going back now as a strength, but it's like, I know, like, they built that interior, like, on a soundstage in Italy. So listen, they were doing, and, like, had to, like, CG in the crowd and the whole thing. It's 2003. I mean, I don't know what I'm asking for here. And it's like a teen movie, but like that dance.
It's terrible.
Oh God. That's kind of what I got. I figured I would just hit some lighter things on the production side. What do you have?
Sure. I mean, Rome.
Rome.
Rome. It's like a postcard. Yeah. And that's great. It's absolutely gorgeous. I love Rome. I spent a couple days in Rome once on a like concert tour thing that I was doing. Loved it. And it was nice to like revisit it.
Did you get mistaken for a pop star as well?
You know, I did, but I said no.
I have to stay with my class.
Yeah, I have to stay with my class. No. But the big strength that I put down also in this was the music. In the way that I'm probably going to mention when I talk about music and Even Stevens, the pop songs written for this movie are just absolute bops. Some of the finest that Disney Channel has come up with. What Dreams Are Made Of alone is just like a chef's kiss moment for like Disney Channel Records, Walt Disney Records, like all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think most of like what I have to say about music is sort of like I talk about in Even Stevens. Lizzie McGuire does the right version of what Even Stevens, I think, in some ways doesn't really do the right version of.
Okay.
My weakness is the moments where they CG in things. It's just really noticeable. And that's part of like because of how much they invested in the on location mm-hmm. shooting. Like I say, for example, when you see the Colosseum and then the camera pans behind Lizzie yeah. and we have like that CG night sky and the 38-year-old woman and she's making moves that we have never seen
that
come out of Lizzie McGuire.
So
Lizzie McGuire, she's not like a talented dancer performer. But Lizzie McGuire, the 14-year-old child, would never be pulling out grandma moves like that. And I think it's just like a matter of where your money is going. And they put a lot of the money, I think, in the right place in this film. But I also would have tried to save as much money as you have for every shot of the climax of the film. I don't know. Just me. Like, I would have made sure that if the climax of the film is going to be her performance, I would have tried to be like, this area, we need X amount of money for this moment to happen, and we do not touch it. This is frozen budget. We will cut from other places. If it means we go to one less location, if it means we pick up one less shot here, we do that. If we're going to make this the shot that's like, this is the shot we want to remember, maybe just not have a 38-year-old do it and don't CGI the background. But other than that, great production value. Great production value.
Great.
Let's talk about production value for Even Stevens' movie. Mm-hmm. Strengths. It is a major upgrade from most Disney Channel original movies. We have a tropical location shoot, huge casts of background actors and supporting actors, balancing all of the recurring characters that you want to see at the end of the show. It's a massive undertaking. When mm-hmm. you just think about mm-hmm. the number of talent that has to be on set for them to do this, it's a lot to handle. And then we're flying them all to a location. Like, it's a lot. So, like, I see you, production value. Unfortunately, we are seeing it through the Disney Channel original movie downgraded equipment.
Yeah.
Not in a 16:9 aspect ratio. The graphics and the special effects. Listen, like the chair spinning moment, like
and the house falling. Oh gosh.
Like I get it. We have limited resources. I will cut you some slack, and I think a lot of us did at the time. Is fortunately for them, Even Stevens was known as a little bit more of this absurdist kind of mm-hmm, show.
Right.
They had the speed up cam that was used in like nearly every episode, which I think was their saving grace here. And is a little bit why we can make so many concessions on the CG. Like the house falling down, I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Uh-huh.
It's bad, but it's not that bad. Like, you know. It also suffers from the DCOM extreme close-up that we see in Halloween Town and Twitches as well. And I just don't think that there's any reason why we need to get so close on someone's face that we can't see their hairline. I just don't think that. And then my last thing is the music. The scoring is more or less fine for the film. It's nothing special. It gets the job done. It's reused over and over. So, like, you hear, like, okay, we're recycling something that we heard earlier at the beginning. Like, okay. It's not a full-on film score like we would have gotten with if the Even Stevens movie was done like the Lizzie mm-hmm. McGuire movie.
Oh, and could you imagine?
Yes, I can imagine.
I can too.
I feel like
and
it would
I
be
want
really
it.
Good. Yeah, yeah. It would be really good. But also, I just have to say, Dream Vacation, especially
Stop
in comparison
it.
To the Lizzie McGuire movie, it just does not stand up.
No!
We get Why Not and What Dreams Are Made Of in the same movie. And for Disney original pop songs, I think they just
like Dream Vacation.
They put Dream Vacation a bit to shame. I'm sorry.
Well, if you put them side by side like that.
Which is what we're doing, Caroline. That's why it's a showdown. If you put them side by side, yes, that's what this episode is. We're putting them side by side, and they don't. They don't. They don't.
I love Dream Vacation.
Tell me your thoughts about the production value.
Well, the number one thing that I have under strength is that I love the Dream Vacation song.
Get out.
And granted, I did say this might just be me.
I think it,
and it, it is a little bit weird, and it is a little bit corny and bizarre. But I just love ending a Disney Channel original movie with a pop song, and I love Christy Carlson Romano singing. So I'm always gonna love that. It's a great song. I don't care what anybody says. And a lot of this other things that you said, I totally agree with. Like the switches from you know, on stage, quote unquote, to backstage of the family fake out reality show is so well done. And they had a lot of fun, I think, with the backstage area where all of the extras are milling around. I loved that. And I also think that the tropical setting is just so much fun. I think it's partially why I loved this as a kid. It was released during the summer, and it always made me think of summer break and vacation and good vibes and just that invite. That's all, again, like, that's not anything measurable. That's just, like, my childhood self just loving that. But I got the same feeling watching it again. And I agree on that. You know, on the budget side in terms of weaknesses, it's the camera work. It's interesting, like, if I didn't know what year these two movies came out, I would never think they came out in the same year, because the lower quality also ages the Even Stevens movie so much. Like, the quality of it, not like, obviously you look at the clothing and you know it's early 2000s, but the quality of it makes it look like it's from the 90s. It looks very, very old. So again, yeah, just the effects, the cinematography, the effects, it's fuzzy. It looks old. It's not as fresh looking as the Lizzie McGuire movie. And I know why, but you know, when you look at them side by side, it becomes very clear. But Dream Vacation, I'm not saying it's better than what Dreams Are Made Of.
I don't think it's on
par.
It's
so good. It's such a good, come on.
I don't think it's on par.
That's what I got.
All right.
All right, yeah, let's pull back to Lizzie for a moment, and let's talk about this as the ending of the Lizzie McGuire series. So, as we talked about a bit before, so in terms of strengths, I know that you might not agree with this, so let's see what you think. So, with Miranda being missing, obviously that's a huge weakness, and we will talk about that. We talked about it a bit already, but we were backed into this choice with Lalaine / Miranda being unavailable. But I actually enjoyed the Kate-Lizzie rivalry culminating in them finally getting along. Their rivalry was such a huge part of the series, made even more fraught by the fact that the two were ex-best friends. And seeing them be able to work it out before they get to high school is a really nice place to leave both Lizzie and Kate thematically. Like, high school, the things that are waiting for them in high school that they are going to be grappling with are so much deeper and bigger than bullying. And I'm so excited to see this, like, girl-to-girl bullying thing get left behind with this movie.
Love I that. See that. I think it could have been done in a better way because I didn't really buy it.
Okay.
After how much has happened with them, I didn't buy that it would just suddenly – because it feel like that it was over with.
I think sometimes changing your environment helps, though, too. Like, in life, you know what I mean?
Sure. But also, we had seen in the series moments where Lizzie and Kate had come together. Like, when I think the episode when they were working on a project together.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they were, like, Lizzie asked the question of, like, why did we stop being best friends?
Yeah.
And, like, they have that heart to heart. I'm like, that moment I want here at the end. Like, if we're gonna let Kate be a bigger character, if we're gonna close up this storyline, let's talk that moment out and be like, what happened to us? Why haven't we been able to fix it? How can we fix it? And now let's support each other. Like, I wanted a little bit more.
So for you, it's a weakness.
Of resolution.
Yeah. So for you, it's a weakness plot wise, but I think it's a strength thematically. Maybe they didn't go about it the right way.
Yes. Yeah. Thematically, it's a good thing.
Also, you know, Lizzie spends so much of her series feeling embarrassed and klutzy. So I'm glad that this movie started off this way so that anyone unfamiliar with the series can get a bit of that sense. Like, what kind of girl are we dealing with here? And what's her main struggle? So even though it's, as we discussed and you said, it's pretty much the biggest stretch of literally all time for someone as insecure as Lizzie to sing to a stadium full of people. Plot-wise, I say no, but thematically, I say yes to her having a larger-than-life moment to literally shove her out of her feelings of unworthiness. So if you said to me, you know, hey, the Lizzie McGuire series needs to end, how do we wrap up Lizzie's journey? I think I would also pick some kind of moment like this, coming into her own via a very big adventure. And I think the heart of what this movie is doing is spot on, even if, like, so it's like we're saying, thematically spot on, the way that the theme is executed in the plot, maybe not so much.
Yeah, like the way that I probably would have actually executed this was, since we've seen more of like a fashion sort of trend in her, they go to Paris and they do fashion, like they're there and they do like a fashion show, or like she's there for fashion week. And like, that's the moment. But it feels like.
But then the Disney executives would tell you that Hillary needs to sing a song.
Exactly. And that's my frustration, where it feels like this move was not coming from Lizzie.
It was coming from what they
were trying to do, how they were trying to position Hillary.
Which is frustrating.
Keep going, though. You're on a roll.
And overall, you know, I think it's, of course, there were plans that never came to fruition as this movie is being shot. But I think it's nice to have Lizzie's high school experience, in a way, remain a mystery. Because we see how much her personal life changes in one summer that it almost makes us ready to let her go. As she's no longer exactly the Lizzie who started the series with us. And we can, like, let her go now and have the next phase of her life without us. And I actually think it's a very beautiful thing. And it's weirdly making me feel emotional when I say that.
I'm 100% ready to let Lizzie go after this movie.
So I think that's a big win, which is interesting because this actually wasn't supposed to be the end. So it's interesting that they still were able to make that happen. But as far as weaknesses, we've touched on it a bit already. Like I said, we didn't get as much of a final moment with all of my favorite characters as I would have wanted. Maybe, like we were discussing a bit with, when it comes to Miss Ungermeyer, you know, with a theatrical release, we don't, number one, have as much of an ability to make this feel like pretty much a prolonged finale episode. We've got to bring in some new elements because it's got to be a movie. It's got to be something different. I don't feel like I got to say goodbye to some of my favorites. I think this also comes from there being plans for more Lizzie after this that never came to pass. And a huge part of that is just Miranda missing. As I said, I think the biggest hit was in the plot because of that, but also thematically, just like this thematically not ending with this trio of friends is just very difficult to get past. And in terms of this movie standing on its own, if you didn't watch the series, like I said, I think they do a pretty nice job of letting us know who Lizzie has been. I think this story can stand on its own, but the thing is that Lizzie is such an every woman that part of the reason we love her is because we know her specific journey and like the specific things that have happened to her, whether it's buying a bra, not being allowed to go to the dance, things like that. Without that, without having that backstory, she might not be unique enough for an audience member who doesn't know the show to really connect with her emotionally. She might be come off as just a little bit too generic if we don't know her stories.
For me, in terms of strengths, in thinking of how well it can stand on its own, how well it can close the series, it was released in theaters, so clearly there was some confidence in Disney that this film could stand on its own for lovers of the TV series and casual viewers who are looking for something to view on the screen. So, like, I would not disagree if Disney felt like it was ready for a big screen, like, to a degree, like, yeah, it could, it handled it. Like, it was number two. Like, yeah, it handled it. And a good bit of this movie holds up. And I think that's partially because of the production value, like just the investment that was put in it. So a lot of it does hold up in the same or in a similar way to, you know, like Princess Diaries, to Freaky Friday, Parent Trap. But I do have some weaknesses here. Surprise, surprise. So with the exception of Lizzie's journey into confidence being one of the central themes of the story, I don't know how much I really buy this as the end of the series, to be honest. So episodes continued to air after this movie came out for a year, even though this was meant to serve as the completion of Lizzie's story. But the episodes that were released do not feel like they are moving in the direction of this film, where Lizzie becomes a pop star, mm-hmm. goes on an adventure practically without any of the friends that meant the most. Not to mention the Gordo kiss just feels rushed and then kind of an afterthought, when that is really a key moment to both of their character arcs. Like, it's not the moment for Lizzie, but it is a big one. Mm-hmm, it is like like, if there's the plot, there's a subplot, and then there's a bunch of like subplots. The subplots of Lizzie McGuire is her relationship with Gordo.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that has been a central theme to the whole series. And it just felt like it was sort of like, it happened and they're like, let's go back inside. And then it's over. And I was like, yeah, it was such happened?
And the fact that I was so shocked, I kind of forgot. I knew it ended pretty much with them kissing, but then the fact that animated Lizzie popped on and wrote the end in the sky, I was like, no way. I was
like, they're not gonna have a, like, I was waiting for like a conversation between the two of them where she was like, hey, I was stupid. I didn't see that you were here the whole time. Like, that's like a sort of Princess Diaries, you saw me when I was invisible kind of moment. Like, invisible. We needed that sort of moment if this was going to be how we resolved these characters. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't a real conversation, but I don't know if this is the fault of the film or of the show, but somebody in Lizzie McGuire owes us an explanation as to why the series doesn't build to this film. If they wanted Lizzie's journey to be that she's a pop star, they had an entire year of episodes that they could have been building up to that so that would make sense, but they didn't do it. The last episode of the series is the episode where Lizzie unashamedly goes to a concert of one of her favorite childhood shows. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that doesn't make sense. I don't believe that, like, they're going to, I think it's called like Magic Train or something like that. And they're going to a Magic Train concert. And then the next thing is, boom, canonically, we're watching her graduate. There's no connection there.
Interesting.
That's a huge miss, and one that they had time to correct and they still didn't do it. The other big weakness for me are the missing / downplayed characters. We're missing Miranda. She's just in Mexico. And that's how we're explaining away that a series regular just isn't participating in the series finale of a film. I don't really buy that. I think they could have had opportunities to splice her in some sort of way, like after the fact, include her in some scenes, or even just delay shooting. Just delay it. Like,
have phone calls. Yeah, film it later. Have her call Miranda in Mexico and tell her everything that's been going on.
It's not like she's working for a different studio. She's working under Disney. I know, that's what's hilarious
to me. I'm like, they couldn't have rearranged that? Like, what?
Or, like, push You Wish. It's a DCOM. They could have held off on that.
Yeah.
I also think the nature of the story itself being placed in a foreign country, while exciting, does in some ways do a little bit of a disservice to the other series regulars, like Lizzie's family, by forcing them into the periphery of our periphery and giving them like a handful of scenes. It doesn't feel as balanced for them as I think it could be. Like, hell, Alex Borstein now has a bigger part than Lizzie's parents, who were top billing on the show for 2 years.
Yeah. Like, and I missed them. I really missed her parents. Yeah.
And also, like, what trip doesn't have chaperones? There was a very easy way that they could have done that, because, like, I was missing them. They're a huge part of the show. In my personal belief of how you can stand this movie on its own, I think you may be hard-pressed to really engage with this movie if you don't bring some knowledge of the characters and the relationships in the similar way that you were saying. Like, some of the film just won't really make sense or have as much meaning that they're meant to. Like, the Gordo kiss at the end. If you did not know that there was such history between Gordo and Lizzie, that kiss really seems like, why did they make them
more
kiss?
Of a deflation, yeah.
It's like, what happened? Like, wait, what? Doesn't really mean anything. So yeah, that's kind of like, those are my big things of what I've got about how this closes the series. Yeah. I think it could have been a really good end of the series, but the issue is this movie and the show are not talking to each other as they're leading up to each other. Yeah. And that's a problem. Meanwhile, over in Even Stevens land, I think one of the strengths is that it ties up the series really nicely. And it also gives us a chance to see the Stevens family, who are at the heart of the TV series, It gives them a chance for them to go through the same story together, because usually each one has one or two or three mm-hmm. subplots of the show. Now they're all doing the same thing together. And that's really fun. That's really special. That feels like the right move. We've got the series payoffs. Like, we get to see Lewis get pranked by someone, a showdown between Ren and Lewis, Donnie be kind of a hero and not the stupid one who's always made out to be.
I love the moment that Donnie gets in this movie.
Lewis and Tawny even have their moment, because at the end of the series, Lewis, when he's prepping to leave, he sort of like writes a letter to Tawny telling her how he feels. Like, they even sort of have like a little moment that's kind of alluded to. So like, they even kind of leave it ambiguous where it's like, what's going on there? Like, that's like, I think that's a smart move. Steve gets a new job at the end. Ren's moving on, getting ready for high school. All the characters are still who we love, but they're all taking a step forward. And I think it's really constructed in a way that you don't need to know much of the history of the characters to have a clear idea of what is happening and enjoy the movie. Because even if this was your first watch and you've never seen anything, the opening scene at Ren's graduation establishes the entire family dynamic. And it gets us real clear on the archetypes of the characters. You've got Ren, who's the valedictorian. You've got Lewis, who's pranksting. You've got Donnie, who's like showing up late and like kind of oblivious to like what's happening. You've got mom and like, it's very, very clear what the dynamic is. Actually, like, I'm kind of shocked at how well they did at letting us know who these characters were right away. So that if I were to watch this on its own, I feel like I'd be pretty confident in it. Mm-hmm. Some of the periphery characters, less so. But the main family that we need to know for the actual plot of the story, I feel golden on. And then the last thing I'll say in terms of strengths is the TV series literally does flow into this series finale. It makes sense that this is the finale of the TV series. It references things from the last episode. It is like, it completes it. It is the other bookend. Makes sense. Weaknesses. There's definitely dated references and dialogue throughout that, you know, maybe don't let it hold up as much after the fact. It could be a bit of a put off for some people, and I'm going to acknowledge that. It's really the attachment that you might have to the characters that gets you through the bad effects, the cinematography, the rest of it, as you go back for a rewatch now. But to be honest, I think as it stands, wrapping up character threads and serving as a final, like, once around, like I said earlier, for all the characters that we love, it ticks all the boxes for me. It does everything that we need to do. And I think that's a testament of having people working on the show, working on the movie, from scripts to directors, all of it. Like, people who have known these characters for a while are the ones dealing with them as we're saying goodbye to them in a larger format.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this ending for the Even Stevens series makes perfect sense. It wasn't the kind of series, like you were saying, that needed an emotional finale where we have lessons learned. Like, this was silly and zany and allowed us just one last romp with the archetypes that we love. And that feels perfect. I will say, too, like, the ending hug and kiss between Ren and Lewis was actually the perfect sweet moment to just bring like a little bit of gravitas when he says, like, you know, I pick on you, but I'm never going to hurt you. I think we actually needed to hear that at the end of the Even Steven series. Like, that was really important. And I think that was really nice.
There's also even some moments in the whole movie itself where Lewis says some things that sort of like allude to what's happened throughout the series where he's like,
yeah, where he's like, you're perfect. You have everything.
Like, you're perfect. You have everything that I want. Like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Like, we're still getting character development here at the end.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, too, like, you can tell that's the people who are working on the series, because little nods to elements of the show, like the speed fast forwards of certain, you know, moments or actions. Those are so much fun for someone like me who's obsessed with the series. And it made it feel extremely seamless, like you were saying. These characters are such archetypes that I think someone who doesn't know the series could still get a lot of laughs out of this. Sure, like, Lewis is so specific. And, like, again, I think what Shia LaBeouf does, literally no one else could do.
Yeah.
If you didn't know the series, you might be like, what is happening? But overall, I think it's just easy to know who these people are and to enjoy that. And I think the theme that we're left with is that despite their antics and their clashes, at the end of the day, the Stevens family will always have each other's backs. And that feels pretty right to me as a way to end it all, because it's a comedy series after all. We're not going to end on anything too terribly heavy. In terms of weaknesses, like, not much. And like you were saying, yeah, I guess there is some character development in this. But at the end of the day, none of these characters got to so much of a new place that we haven't seen for them before, which is sometimes why we do a finale film instead of just a finale episode. I think maybe I could have used a little bit more of that, but again, I still don't feel like I needed that from this comedy series. So it's not a terribly, like, it's not a major weakness for me. And did I feel like it was saying goodbye to characters I love? I don't know. I feel like you said, we got the last go around. Did I feel like it was a farewell? Not so much, but again, it's okay.
It's kind of like a, it feels like it's like a see you later.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like, even Stevens isn't the type of show that has like a farewell. Where yes. I feel like Lizzie McGuire is a show that has like a farewell.
And that's exactly why I am feeling torn on this showdown. Because in Lizzie, we get a bit more of an emotional arc journey. While with the Stevens family, we get a one last like blowout moment of them doing what they do best. And not only do those vibes fit the arcs of each of the series, but they fit the mediums that they're in as well. Like, one last blowout belongs on TV, and an emotional arc belongs in movie theaters. So I don't know. Each of these series got a movie that matched their tones very, very well. So it's very hard for me to decide. And my gut was leaning towards Even Stevens, and part of it is because I have a huge affinity towards that film. And then I start thinking about, like, this is going to sound so silly to say, but, like, kind of, like, for lack of a better term, like, the cultural impact of the Lizzie McGuire movie. It's like, wait, hang on. It's kind of not for nothing. Like, it's launched brands. Like, My Supply Company launched because of the Sing to Me Paolo shirt. Like, this movie has significance to the people that it was made for. That lasts, that in a way that Even Stevens' movie hasn't lasted, but again, was it supposed to? I'm very torn on this.
I have a very clear winner for me, and that's the Even Stevens movie. Mm-hmm. I think for me, and if you've been through this podcast, you know I come down on story, I come down on plot. It needs to work. Like, it needs to work. Everything needs to be coming from the characters. Everything needs to be coming from the story. Even Stevens' movie does that. Lizzie McGuire does that less so. And that's the biggest thing for me. The payoffs from Even Stevens, I feel, hit harder than the Lizzie McGuire movie does. Lizzie McGuire movie does not feel like I'm ready to leave Lizzie McGuire at the end of the movie, but I don't feel like it's completed because it doesn't make sense. Like, it feels different from the series. It doesn't feel complete. And I think at the end of the day, if we're looking at these as like, which movie ended their series, which did a better job ending their series, which had a better plot, which had a better production value, even if we're comparing them to themselves at the time or other things that are even within their genre, I think Even Stevens ticks more boxes than Lizzie McGuire does. So I will rest my case with Even Stevens, hardcore. Cultural impact be damned. I'm not saying kill one. I'm not saying like save one, get rid of the other.
No, absolutely because, like, not. No.
I do want What Dreams Are Made Of. Like, we need that song. And we need Why Not. I appreciate the meaning of the Lizzie McGuire movie for the people that it came out for.
Yeah, I wonder what you would feel if you had seen it at that time.
Honestly, I think I probably would have been disappointed because I loved Lizzie McGuire and I probably would have felt like it was weird.
At the end of the day, what I'll say is, even though this is kind of taking it past the analysis that we did just now, I think I loved that So Raven as well. But Lizzie McGuire and Even Stevens were my two favorite Disney Channel series.
Mine too.
And the Lizzie McGuire movie therefore should have stuck with me as much as the Even Stevens movie did. And for some strange reason, it didn't. Like, I know I saw it in movie theaters, but I don't have, like, I have a very distinct memory of seeing The Princess Diaries in movie theaters. Mm-hmm. This I don't remember as much. And again, I think there's a disadvantage. Like, there's just so much more opportunity for laughs and things in the Even Stevens movie, but it just really delivered on that front.
Yeah.
So it's so strange, but I guess it is the Even Stevens movie.
Yeah, I think Even Stevens movie is the winner of this showdown.
It's just so interesting.
It's a shame. It's a shame.
It is a shame.
Lizzie had a chance.
Lizzie should have been like a la The Princess Diaries. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lizzie McGuire had a chance that basically no one else was really afforded except for like High School Musical by the time it had already produced a couple.
And I wonder if it's because like they were like, we're going to do all the runs. We don't have to fit everything into this movie. I bet that's a large part of it. But I just find it so – it really is – when you really start thinking about the things these two movies have in common, it's very bizarre. And the fact that they came out within a month of each other, it's so strange. Yeah. Just like being tricked, Summer Vacation – Big Song, like your sibling coming for you. It's just like very
there's a lot of similarities between them. Yeah. And honestly, I would not be surprised, and I haven't done this much research, so this is all speculation, but I would not be surprised if this was Disney testing how they would end all future Disney Channel original series to see what would have the bigger bang for the buck, whether it would be the theatrical release or whether it would be the DCOM. And I think while Lizzie McGuire movie was successful, I think the critical response of it probably pushed them away, where they were like, okay, the only way that this can actually work is if the show was so well loved like Lizzie McGuire. And Lizzie McGuire was truly like a zeitgeist moment. Uh-huh. They've never been able to make something like Lizzie McGuire again.
Yeah.
They've never been able to make something like Even Stevens again. Mm-hmm. So like, it would be a risk for them to do another big budget theatrical release for a series that wasn't Lizzie McGuire and wasn't Even Stevens, because it probably would have flopped, because the people who buoyed Lizzie McGuire movie were the fans who were coming either way.
All I know from this bottom line is that I need a mashup of What Dreams Are Made Of and Dream Vacation. Somebody make that.
Is that what we need?
That's called the Summer 2003 Hit Parade.
I feel like what I need is Even Stevens shot and budgeted the way that Lizzie McGuire was.
I'd be down.
Or even half of what Lizzie McGuire had. If they did the Even Stevens movie on the scale and budget of Princess Diaries, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
On that $26 million. But either way, at the end of the day,
congratulations, Even Stevens.
Congratulations, Even Stevens movie.
Yeah.
There might be people who will hate me at the end of all of this.
Let's see. I think
we'll see what happens.
Every time I mention the Even Stevens movie to people, they're like, oh my God, that was one of my favorites. So let's see what people have to say.
All righty. Well, there you have it, folks. Congratulations, Even Stevens movie.
As we don't make it easy for ourselves. We really don't. No, we don't.
We're like, hey, take two things from your childhood that you like. Now, put them against each other and crucify yourself as you try to figure out which one means the most to you. I mean, fortunately for me, I didn't have to do that. But for you, a little bit.
Yeah, this was really – it's actually bothering me a little bit right now. I can't believe I just did that.
Lovely. Well, thank you all very much for sticking with us to the end. If you liked this episode, please remember to hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcast. That way all of our episodes download to your device. You don't miss out on anything. And remember to hit 5 stars and leave a rating or review wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave a rating. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a rating and review. If you're listening on Good Pods, you can do it there. If you're listening on Facebook, you can do it there. So please, 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 it would mean the world to us. Thank you.
And please follow us on social media. First of all, you can always just throw up a little link to one of the episodes if you really like. If you want to talk to your friends about these two Disney Channel movies, Disney movies, throw up a little link to this episode, have them listen to it, and let's talk about it. So we are at Poor Unfortunate Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and we are at Unfortunate Pod on Twitter. So we'll, of course, after this episode airs, be talking a lot about these two movies. So get over there and please chime in. And if you'd like to discuss this episode, all of our episodes, Disney in general, even further, please join us in our private Facebook group, The Poor Unfortunate Fam. We're at around like 100 members over there right now, and we discuss the episodes. Sometimes we drop little hints about what's coming up next if you'd like to be privy to those hints. We take quizzes, talk about Disney news. Folks share, you know, little tidbits from their Disney trips, which I'm sure Connor and I will be doing once we hopefully go to Disney World again. So we just also love getting to know you better, finding out about who's listening out there to the podcast. It's so lovely to find out that there are actually real people who are out there listening. So please join and introduce yourself, because we would love to welcome you in.
And the last thing I'll say is that it does take us a little bit of money to keep the podcast up and running and coming to you all. We do have a PayPal account. It's linked in the episode description and in the bios of our social media accounts. Truly, anything that you might have to spare goes a long way for us. You can make a one-time donation. You can make a monthly donation. You can make it $5, $10, more than that. All of it just goes right back into the podcast, keeping it free and ad-free for the most part. So thank you to everyone who has donated. Thank you to all of our monthly donors as well. It means so much to us that you are helping us to continue bringing this to you. Thanks so much. All right, enough of that. Well, until next time, folks.
Beluga Savruga.